Good morning and welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Lee, we have a jam-packed and fun-filled morning.
Filled with inventors.
I can't believe
it. How cool is that?
It's, you know, there's only a couple things that excite me.
Inventors and
Kenny Rogers. Yes. As a matter of fact, I think I'm sweating a little bit behind my knees right now.
Has Kenny Rogers invented anything?
Oh, I'm sure he's invented many things. We'll have to find out.
Yeah.
We'll have to find out. I know he's invented many...
songs?
Many songs. I don't think he writes much of that.
Really?
Mm-mm.
He doesn't write the songs?
No. I don't think he does.
So
but it's
just,
okay.
He just sings them?
We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about his many marriages.
I'm obsessing now. Mm. I thought he wrote songs.
You know, the day after Christmas is a big day, too, because I switch out the everyday Kenny Rogers, put it back in, and replace it.
With the holiday?
Well, the holiday's in now, so okay. We do the swap out on the 26th.
Cool.
Yeah, so maybe we shouldn't have a show on the 26th.
Okay, deal.
All right, I got to do my Kenny Rogers swap out.
Sounds good.
Maybe he can help me with that. We've got a packed room this morning, and I want to talk about all of these inventions and at least get our listeners excited enough to where they'll contact these folks and learn more. First up, we have George Hammond with the water tube. I tell you, last night I came home from a girl's party, and I had wine in my trunk. I'm taking it inside. I left the trunk open on my car all night.
Nice.
Uh-oh.
So I have the water trunk this morning. I really... Yes.
If only you had the trunk size water tube.
I should have had the trunk size water tube. Without further ado, George Hammond, tell us about the water tube.
The water tube is a product that we developed for the homeowner, especially during the drought situation, and it is a 35-ounce vinyl tube. It's approximately 15 feet long by 27 inches in diameter. It holds 450 gallons of water under pressure fill capacity. And it's really a dynamic type thing because it's easily hidden in the shrubbery. When you roll it out, it's about, you know, full 15 feet long, but you can cover it with pine straw and hide it in the shrubbery or hide it behind the azalea bushes. And when folded up, it's only 33 inches long by 13 inches high and only weighs 33 pounds empty. So it's something easy to move around and store.
So just to describe it to our listeners, it's a huge 15-foot long, big plastic bag.
Well, vinyl, we like to call it.
Yeah. Vinyl bag.
It's pretty heavy-duty vinyl.
Right, so it's not going to tear or anything.
No. We developed this technology. We're in the erosion control business out of protecting shorelines and upland property from hurricane storm surge. So this is very high durable vinyl. And,
right. It's made to last.
Made to last.
So it's reusable?
It's totally reusable. Has a 5-year warranty on material and seams.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you can just leave it in your kind of... If you have the, what is it called? The
pine straw?
Pine straw. Right. You can just leave it there, cover it with pine straw, and kind of forget about it, can't you?
Exactly. You just put it in your shrubbery and forget about it. It's not unsightly. It looks great in the pine straw. You can't even tell it's there.
And then as it rains and the rain goes down your gutters into the downspouts, then it just plugs right into the bag and just fills the bag.
Right. It fills the bag right up. We've had 3 rains since Thanksgiving, and my bag's completely full right now. And what's so great about it is you can hook it up to a sprinkler system. We use a 1-horsepower sprinkler pump, and you can run 2 to 3 sprinklers off of it versus a gravity drip system where you're just dripping water out and having to water with a bucket. This is really fantastic where you can run a hose and actually water your lawn.
Wow, that is amazing because I wondered what you did with the water. The concept in the picture is pretty self-explanatory on your website. But I wasn't real sure how you got the water then from the water tube to a usable form. That's really interesting. I'm looking at the information here as well. It sounds so expensive. Can you talk a little bit about the price of it?
Well, it's really not that expensive when you take it down and see how much water it really holds. Suggested retail is $389.
Wow, that's it.
Right.
That's surprising.
Another solution would be those water barrels.
Yeah, the water barrels. And water barrels sell from $70 to $90 a piece. And say $70 water barrel, it would take 9 water barrels to equal the capacity. That's $630.
Right. And where are they going to sit? Around your house?
They have to be right under the drain spout.
Right, so that's not a good solution for most people.
Not a good. It doesn't hold enough water to really run a sprinkler system off of it.
But so how in the world do you come up with this concept? What's your background, and are you always inventing things?
I wish. My background is product development, marketing, and sales, really. But I came up with this just thinking about the crisis that we're having here in Atlanta with the water situation and seeing some of the things that people were using, like the trash cans and water barrels, you know, in front of their house, and large containers that, you know, you could just stick out. And I think, well, we've got this vinyl tube. This would make a terrific water barrel. You know, it would lay flat.
Right.
You can lay it in the bushes. They won't be able to see it. And it holds so much more water than a barrel. And it's kind of, the way it's so self-contained, no little rodents or anything can crawl into it.
Right. Now, when it's laying flat in your shrubbery and it's filling with water, how high does it actually get about?
Very good question. When it's mine is just about completely full, and I'd say it's probably about 20 inches high.
So, but that still can be covered by the pine straw.
It's still covered by the pine straw. As a matter of fact, this has pine straw on it, and the pine straw just kind of rose a little bit.
Right,
but you still
like
can't see it.
Right, it just starts looking like you have a big
mound.
It
looks like a big little mound, exactly.
Wow. People need to find out about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to be selling a ton of these.
We'd love for them to visit our website.
Yeah, what's the website?
It's www.advancedcoastaltechnologies.com.
Last question for you. What does it do to the soil around it? I mean, it looks like you have a background in erosion control and things like that. That would be my concern, the landscaping around it. Does it sink?
No, it doesn't sink. Of course, water weighs 8.6 pounds per gallon. And what we try and do is locate them in an area that is not landscape per se, you know, on top of the ground.
Right.
Where it'd be on the side of the house or
sure.
in an area that's not, people aren't really looking at it back in the shrubbery.
Right.
But it won't sink the ground or upset the landscaping in any way.
Right.
George, thank you so much for being with us today. And if you're interested in learning more about the water tube, visit his website because this is really cool. And
right.
when you're talking about it, I was thinking, Lee, it was going to be thousands of dollars. Weren't you?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, it's so big and it's so useful. This is the greening of America. All those greenies are going to love this.
For all those people that haven't Christmas shopped yet.
Yeah, good idea. Remember, www.advancedcoastaltechnologies.com. Thank
good
you.
Good stuff.
Thank
Thanks,
you, George.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so you're at the airport.
Yes.
I'm not real sure, Lee, if you get grossed out like I do, but it's that germ pit between when you put your junk on the conveyor belt and then you walk over to put your shoes back on?
Yes.
How nasty is that?
The walk of germs?
Yes. I can
what
just
happens
picture,
when you're doing that?
Yeah. I can just picture all this junk, you know, crawling around the floor. Ugh.
If only there was a solution.
If only there were a solution. Well, Alan Hess is with us this morning with the airline booty. When I first heard airline booty, I thought it was something like really wrong kind of going on at the airport until I saw the product. Another incredible inventor, Alan Hess, welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. Good morning.
So tell us, how does your mind work? What what made you come
you
up
with a much longer discussion?
With an airline booty. Tell us about it.
I was traveling on business, and I was sitting in Chicago Airport on a rainy day watching everybody walk through on a wet floor with no shoes. Kind of got grossed out about it. Talked to two of my business partners. We did about 6 months' worth of research to speaking with immunologists, podiatrists, all sorts of doctors, research on the web, WebMD, et cetera, and decided it was a pretty good breeding ground for lots of bacteria, and it was kind of not a good thing to walk barefoot or even in stocking feet on the barefoot in a floor in the airport. So we came up with the idea of a disposable slipper. That's the airport booty.
So where are you marketing this?
We sell it on our website. We sell it through two other corporations, actually, as marketing promotional items for companies to use and or give away and or to airports to provide. We've talked to TSA. Our largest client right now is here in Atlanta, Park and Fly. They actually provide it as a free promotional item in about 12 or 13 cities on their shuttle buses.
And it can be branded, right?
It can be branded. Actually, theirs does say courtesy of Park and Fly on it. They're available at Maury Luggage in 5 states. And a number of other places, a number of websites have also chosen to go with our product that are providing products to travelers.
Can you talk a little bit about how, when you started this, obviously you created this from scratch, the process of inventing something, take us through from an idea into an actual product in your hand.
It's actually a pretty creative process and a pretty fun process, and I'm fortunate that both my partners, Bob Vonderhorst and Bruce Meyer, are also pretty creative sales marketing people like myself. We actually sat around and talked about what would we want in a product. We came up with a couple of design criteria, In terms of price points, functionality, our particular product is different than anything else on the market. It is brandable. It is non-porous. It is skid resistant. Those are things we wanted in the product for usability for travelers. And then to make it usable in the market as a promotional item, it had to be cost effective and brandable.
I love the fact that it's no skid. I looked at the bottom of them. It's pretty substantial for what it is, being disposable.
Yeah, it's a lot more sturdy than we'd think for a disposable product. And if you look at some of the there are a few competing products that some airports are putting out there, actual surgical booties, which is kind of how we got the name. Those are not necessarily – first off, they're porous. They're not skid resistant, and you can't brand them. So while they're less expensive, they're not very effective. Mm-hmm. The biggest challenge from a health perspective is they're porous, so you're really not protecting yourself.
So is it okay if I jump on to the next one? Because I'm so excited about this, Lee.
Are you done with the airport booties?
Do you have any other questions about the airport booty?
I'm good.
Tell us where our listeners can learn more about the airport booty.
There's information on our website, www.airportbooties.com. That's one word, and it's B-O-O-T-I-E-S, airportbooties.com. We've got information out there. We've got links to TSA and an investigative health report by ABC News that talked about the reason you'd want something like that. And one quick comment, we did a lot of work with TSA and have to give them a little bit of credit. They take a lot of abuse, but give them a little bit of credit. Within 2 weeks, they turned around our request and actually updated their website and their shoe removal policy to have an exception for disposable slippers such as ours. So that was a pretty incredible feat that we kind of take credit for, and working with TSA, and they did a good job of that.
2 weeks. I would have never thought it would be that quick.
We didn't either.
Yeah. Wow. The government in 2 weeks?
Well, they recognize the issue, and they and they realize that people are concerned about that, and the fact that companies like ours are coming out with products. They can't directly endorse us, but they modified the policy to make it functional and usable.
Wow. I definitely see the need for that. I've got my stocking stuffers now, Lee, with my airport booties.
And your Rapkins.
My Rapkins. I can't tell you how annoying it is when you're at a bar, and for some reason it's particularly obvious in the South to me, being from the North. It seems like drinks sweat more in the South. Is that correct? Is it the humidity factor?
I don't know.
You
I'm
go
from
to grab
Miami.
Your,
it happens all the time.
You go to grab
there.
Your glass. It's all sweaty, and then your hands wet, and ugh. The perfect solution, the Rapkin. Tell us, Alan, about the Rapkin.
Rapkin is kind of an interesting product. Believe it or not, it's not one that my partners and I invented. Actually, another person invented that, a gentleman in town by the name of Albert McDonald. That's actually his invention. He is in the midst of patenting that. He had the same thought that you did. People go through a number of napkins, and they tend to shred, and they're not very useful, and you go through it. He came up with the idea of basically a somewhat more durable, brandable napkin that goes around drink glasses, bottles, etc., and calls it a Rapkin. And the listeners can't see it, but the ones you have, we can pretty much print anything on it. We got involved with Albert because my business from the airport booties, we do a lot of work in international production and marketing. And Albert came with that idea to us to see if we can have it produced inexpensively, and we're basically his production arm. We're the we have them produced overseas and delivered here in the U.S. As needed.
Does it come in all sizes, or is this the standard size?
I didn't bring the second one. There are two sizes for it. That's the main one. There's another one that looks a little more like your traditional koozie. It has a bottom to it.
Oh, so it goes around the glass.
Exactly.
I was thinking like this. I see. So it actually
fits. Opens up.
Wraps.
Okay. Yep, it wraps.
Wow. Hence,
and that way you can
the
keep wrapping. The branding. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It
if you go to his, if you were to go to the website, www.rapkin.com, there's a little animation that shows it slipping over the bottle or glass, and how it can be used for promotional purposes, whether it's their nonprofit or for profit purposes.
Now, typically, is the logo on both sides? Because on the sample, the logo's on one side, and then the kind of the sales pitch is on the back.
Yeah, right now the sales pitch obviously is on the back.
No, I know that, but like for the consumer, would it be the logo on both sides, or they can put whatever they want?
Yeah, it could be either. If you're doing it, as an example, if you were doing it for a fundraising promotion, you could have the fundraising event on one side and a promotional sponsor on the other side. If you're doing it as a purely product for commercial purposes, you could have your logo on both sides, or as you see here, it could be a Rapkin information on one side and a product name on the other side, or school logo. You've got the
right.
You've got
you
the Gator one.
You could put two sponsors on.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's just a, it's just a question of printing. So it's a it's a very simple print promotion item. And the nice part about it is it lasts quite a long time. What you'll find with that is it does not disintegrate. It'll absorb the water but not disintegrate like a typical napkin will. My girlfriend actually has used hers on her drink mug at work, and it, believe it or not, lasted about a month. The only reason she got rid of it is because it basically got dirty from her fingerprints, so she had to get her a new one. But it did not disintegrate.
What's it made of? It's not regular paper.
It's a paper-based product with actually, I'm not sure the exact materials in it, but it is a paper-based product.
Were you always inventing, Alan? I mean, as a kid, did you come up with concoctions and inventions?
Probably like most kids, I played with Erector sets and the chemistry sets and blew a few things up and probably annoyed my parents with stuff like that. But I was not a very typical inventor. I actually went through the corporate world and have a long background in the corporate Fortune 100 arena and kind of do this on the side as a creative outlet.
Very creative.
Do you have anything coming up? Any product in the pipeline?
Got
dry on anybody?
Nothing that I can talk about yet. We're a little early in the cycle. It's kind of tough. We're working on a couple of products that have to go through kind of a development cycle for proof of concept to make sure that they work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have some ideas. This one obviously worked. We can do that pretty easily. And the airport booties. There's a few others I'm not quite ready yet.
So is it patented? The Rapkin?
Albert is working on patenting that. The airport booties, we can't patent a slipper. That's kind of a difficult thing to do. But we did trademark the name and the concept, so that is protected with the U.S. Patent Trademark Office.
And how did you go about that? That's probably a big process.
That's a whole show unto itself.
Yeah, that's probably a really big process.
It is. You can do it on your own and try and maneuver through that process. My partners and I, Bob and Bruce, we chose to actually hire a lawyer in town and have them take us through that because it is a very complicated process. Even a simple thing you'd think like a trademark really is a complicated process, and we've been doing it for 9 months with a lawyer, and we just got approved for our two trademarks. So it's something I don't know that I would recommend to do on your own, maybe, but some people do.
Maybe if the TSA was involved, it could be done faster.
Maybe. Well, Alan, thank you for being on the show. We're going to go ahead and let you swap out with the other guests, but we've got the Inventors Association of Georgia. I know a lot of people have ideas. They probably look for an outlet and a group to get together with and brainstorm. I know when I have an idea, I like to talk to people that are going to get excited about it, and maybe people that have been through the same process of patenting or trademarking things. The Inventors Association of Georgia is a group that meets regularly, and we are fortunate enough today to have Dave with us from the Inventors Association. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Dave Savage.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We are looking to tell people about what we offer and have two of us here.
Dave, do you mind moving? The mic's got to be in front of your mouth there.
Okay. Ready?
All right.
Tell us a little bit about the Inventors Association of Georgia.
The Inventors Association of Georgia has been around for 30 years, and it has its goal is to help and inspire wannabe and regular inventors and young entrepreneurs with the resource information and affirming what they know and to confirm with others what the good advice they may have heard.
I would imagine the advice you get from the participants in a group like that is far more valuable than anything. Do you present these ideas to one another in a group format?
Some associations have an active way of having a focus group format. We are working on doing that. Our format is to have a presenter talk for an hour, usually an expert in some area, packaging, patenting, etc. Or we also have people come tell their journey story, like Mike here and they will share their mistakes and their successes, and we learn from their successes and failures along the way.
Now, can a person come there just with an idea, or do they have actually had to have invented something?
No, absolutely not. We have people who said, I don't even have an idea. I just feel like an inspired person. I'm coming to look for an idea and be inspired by other people's suggestions. We have lots of novices, obviously, who have things rattling around their head for numbers of years, and they're looking to get launched in the right way and not make not reinvent the wheel. And so part of what they're here for is to gain the experience of others. And we also have Tom Newell here. He's the incoming president, and he's got an active product on the market. And he is, we learn, he shares what he knows. And yeah, we also have a number of, one of our great things we offer is the number of our mentors are professionals. They are patent attorneys, packaging people, prototype people. And these are people who provide services to our inventors. But during the meetings, they're giving out great, great free advice.
Tom, how did you get involved with the Inventors Association of Georgia?
Well, like many inventors, I also have my own personal journey story. I had had a couple of ideas that I had played with, and as many inventors out there who may be thinking about an idea that they have, a lot of reluctance on my part to really do anything with it, and sort of a confusion or fear, if you will, of well, if I put this out there, maybe somebody might steal the idea, or what if it fails, or where will I find the money? And then I stumbled across this group, and by the encouragement of some friends and associates who said, hey, that's a really good idea, you've got to do something with it, I took that next step forward and asked to start getting advice and help along the way.
So how did you get your idea from your head to the store shelf? And tell us what your product is.
I'd be happy to. Thank you for asking that question. My product is called the Book Bug, and you can find it at thebookbug.com. And it's a clip that holds books open hands-free. And
ooh, I like that. Would it hold a cookbook?
It will, in fact, and it will hold books on exercise equipment and pretty much in any configuration you can imagine. So it's one of those things that people just simply say, why didn't I think of that, when they see the idea? And we hear that a lot in the inventor circles. People will say, oh, I envisioned something like that before, or they've had the idea before, and then it's on the shelf. So we always tell people, when you have the idea, that's the time to take the initiative. That's the time to step forward and say, hey, I need some help. Don't necessarily disclose to other people what your idea specifically is. You do want to protect yourself legally and do some things that are proper in regards to protecting your intellectual property, like have a non-disclosure agreement signed by people you're sharing information with, and there are other steps to take as well.
Is there any, like, simple step? Like, could you I remember a long time ago, like, people were mailing things back to themselves in registered envelopes. Like, does that protect you in any way?
It really doesn't. Most patent attorneys will tell you the really best protection is a spiral-bound notebook, or really a stitched book called an idea book. And this allows you to track really the progress of an idea from inception through its stages of development. Mm-hmm. Because as you come with the idea in your mind, you're going to want to put it on paper. Mm-hmm. And you'll either do it yourself through sketch drawings that you do, or you'll have an engineer assist you in that. So this gives a chronicled record if someone is actually trying to steal the idea, right, and you're having to defend it in court, something to go back and say, but here's when I put that idea on paper. Here right. It is, here it's dated, and it's chronologically ordered, and obviously you can't tear the binding out of a stitched book.
So really the key element is the fact that it's a stitched book, and it's over time you've compiled this information?
Absolutely. Much more admissible in court, although I'm not an attorney, but that's what I've been told.
Where can we find the Book Bug?
www.thebookbug.com.
So can you take us through your journey a little bit? Like, what was your eureka moment? You were, what, exercising or something, and you're like, man, I need this book to stay open.
Actually, I was sitting at a table with a book in front of me with a salt shaker on one side and a pepper shaker on the other. And I said, there's got to be a better way. And of course, you know, a lot of times you go in a restaurant. I don't know how many of you folks like to read while you eat, but I'm one of those kind of people. I've always got my nose stuck in a book. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking for salt, pepper shakers. I'm looking for, sugar.
The heavy.
Right. And you see people like this. Sometimes they fall all over the place. It was that eureka moment of, hey, there's got to be a way to do this that would be so much easier.
That's portable.
Portable and just facilitates the process much more simply. Mm-hmm. And I actually sought out the help of an engineer. We put the sketches on paper. He began to visualize how we would craft the components. And, of course, it's a plastic-based product with a spring insert. And he assisted me in actually getting that engineering drawings done and going through the prototyping stages. And then at that point, starting to go and move into a direction of protecting the intellectual property through the patenting process.
Now, is this something where I know a lot of people have ideas, but they may not have the skills to, you know, take it to the next step? Did you have to, like, pay to have the engineer involved, or did you create a partnership? How did you move forward?
Obviously, any of those options would be viable. You could enjoin someone in a partnership right. process. You could certainly pay them for prototyping. That's the purpose of the Georgia Inventors Association, by the
where,
way.
That's where you get a big pile of resources available?
We're here to really facilitate that process for the inventor so they can come to a place where they feel comfortable, they're amongst like kind. Mm-hmm. You know, there's sort of a standing joke that a lot of inventors were kind of a quirky people. So, you know, birds of a feather do like to flock together. Mm-hmm. And so they can come to a place like that in a good comfortable setting with food and beverage and meet people that can facilitate and help them at where they're at on their particular journey with their invention.
One of the things we try to do is both encourage them but also give them a dose of reality. We have people coming with no idea how long it takes or how much it costs. Whenever we have people come and speak to us, we try to emphasize that very much. We try to have them say, hey, this patenting process, we thought it would be $2,000, $5,000 later. We thought it would take 6 months to get up to the stage. 3 years later, we're cranking along and working hard to be here at this stage in 3 years.
Now, is when you have an invention, is it something that you have to wait until all that process is done before you start rolling it out to see if the customer's even going to buy it? Or can you kind of test the waters without going through the patenting and all that other stuff?
I'm one of the strong believers that you go ahead and go to market with concept and go to market with product in hand. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, you lose traction, you lose momentum, you lose a marketing opportunity.
Right.
And the intellectual property, everyone pretty much knows, about 92% of all patents that are issued do not produce any financial results. So it's a means to an end, but it's not the solution to the problem.
Right.
It's one of those things where you really want to have a patent or you want to have a trademark or service mark to at least have that in place to ward off, if you will, people of unscrupulous motives.
Right. Now, do inventors get kind of bogged down on this? Like, they spend a lot of energy protecting an idea that may or may not even fly in the marketplace?
One of the biggest mistakes we see is people coming in, they've already spent $10,000 on a patent attorney, filed their patents, and now they're ready to start going into prototyping.
Right.
They've gotten the horse before the cart.
Right. Mm.
Or the other way around.
One of the things we find also is that because they have not put it out there in any form at all, they have chosen a design based on their information that they have in their head, based on materials or product manufacturing methodology. And so because they did not check with other people, they didn't realize, oh, I could have made this out of fiberglass and had it be interchangeable in some way. And so that many of our speakers tell us that it's so important to get a lot of feedback on materials, manufacturing methods, and that their initial design was based on limited thinking about the process and not the holistic approach.
So you guys believe that you should sell one first to see if there's a need for this?
Well, you sell them, give them away, get right. You know, get valuable information. You know, one of the things in marketing we like to teach people is let your market tell you what they want. Stop trying to tell the market what it is you want right. them to have.
So as being part of the Inventors Association of Georgia, there's a speaker that comes in and presents, and then what type of roundtable goes on as far as exchanging of ideas? Is that networking, or is it how does that work?
We have a couple different forums. After the speaker, we have a little business meeting, but we have a whole session of Q&A, and that's where both our attendees are both the questioners and also the answers, because there's probably more knowledge in the room from the members from their own personal journeys. And I tell people it's all 2 degrees of separation. Not only do people have knowledge about their professional careers, family businesses, and a whole lot of rest, a lot of the other things, but you're looking to learn from others and get connections from them. As I tell people, we are not holding your hand along the journey, but we are shining the flashlight on the many paths up the mountain. And so we're a backup resource. And, of course, as leaders of this group, we have a tremendous body of connections, people who have come and gone and are part of our group.
Can you talk a little bit about an upcoming something coming up called Everyday Inventors?
PBS has a show now in second year of production and coming up for the third year. And Everyday Edison's is put on by a company out of North Carolina that is in the invention development business. And they are having what they call a casting call. They're looking for people to come on the show in the third season. And Everyday Edison's is about actually finding a viable product that needs to be developed by the experts' estimation. And they provide funding, they provide research, they provide manufacturing, and part of their sponsorships, they have provide distribution. And they're having a casting call on January 12th at the Gwinnett Civic Center. And it's going to be a massive thing, and we are going to be a co-host of the event. We're going to have an information table there. And this year, they're expanding that casting call to be a series of seminars free for people to come. And if you want to be on the email list to get noted about that, everydayedisons.com, they have information about the event, how to apply for the casting call. If you would like to be on our email list for future announcements of our meetings and all other things, we provide a great deal of resources with our announcements of our meetings. And our website is georgiainventors.com. And I, as past president and email guru, the email you can send this to would be, I guess I'll give you my personal one, dave@davesavage.com. So it's dave@davesavage.com. And we'll be glad to get you on the announcement.
And we'd also like to extend an invitation to anyone who'd like to visit our group. We meet on the last Saturday of each month at 10 o'clock. To 12, and we meet currently at the Ryan's on Holcomb Ridge Road, right next to Jimmy Carter Boulevard and Eastern Industrial.
It's on our website, and I supply the information. So if you lose all that, you can always just remember, you can always Google Georgia and Inventors, and GeorgiaInventors.com comes up.
Lee, I'm feeling really, I'm feeling like a slacker.
I know, I haven't invented anything.
You've got the water tube, the airline booty, the Rapkin, the book bug. Wow.
Those are all great stocking stuffers.
They're all great stocking stuffers, except the water tube wouldn't fit. I need the water tube for my trunk. maybe we can work on that. Great, great show, Lee. Great group of inventors. And if you want to learn more about any of these inventions, please visit their website. And for now, I'm Amy Otto. And Lee, do you have any holiday thoughts?
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays from the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Have a great day. We'll